is supported by Filling the Well, a new podcast from Arts Midwest created to nourish, provoke, and inspire artists and arts leaders. In this five-part series, hear from creative changemakers as they share their takes on how to shift power dynamics, avoid burnout, build authentic community, share resources, and advocate for support. With each episode, you'll find links to explore these ideas further and act in your community. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or check out artsmidwest.org/fillingthewell. Welcome to Nonprofit Lowdown. I'm your host, Rhea Wong.
Hey, podcast listeners, it's Rhea Wong with you once again with Nonprofit Lowdown. Today, my guest is Michelle Jackson, who is the Executive Director of the Human Services Council. And we are going to talk about claiming an edge, the courage to be remarkable, to maybe rattle some cages. I think it's going to be a great time. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks so much for having me. I always like talking about good trouble. So
good trouble.
This will be fun.
My first job out of college was with Mother Jones magazine, and they gave everyone t-shirts that said raise hell, hellraisers.
Amazing. So, see, I like that attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Before we jump into this, tell us a little bit about yourself and the Human Services Council.
Yeah. So the Human Services Council, we represent about 170 human service organizations across New York City. And when we say human services, we mean nonprofits who do a bunch of services from senior services to mental health services, helping those experiencing homelessness, running childcare centers. So really our membership runs like the whole gamut of all types of services. And I think workers are always surprised at probably how many human services touch their lives, whether it's going to a gym, that's a nonprofit, or having a grandma who plays mahjong at the senior center on the weekends. You know, there's a lot of human services that touch people throughout their lives. And I've been at the Human Services Council for 15 years. It was supposed to be my starter job out of law school. And I got like roped into how amazing the organizations were that we worked with, and the work became more and more fun. And right in the start of the pandemic, I became the executive director of the organization. So talk about a different time to lead. It's presented its own challenges and opportunities.
Impeccable timing, but actually maybe never a better time, because I think obviously this pandemic has shown how essential our workers are and our essential workers are. Okay. Absolutely. So let's get into it. So the reason why you and I are talking today is that the Human Services Council has put together some really good videos, and they're really different than I think what we see with the typical nonprofit videos, like the pan out, the background music, the puppy, whatever it may be. But you actually took a different approach. You put together some really funny videos, and I'll definitely put them in the show notes for people to watch. But tell me a little bit about these videos.
Yeah. So they started, I guess, 5 years ago now. A pandemic dating is like very hard. But organically, the Human Services Council, we came across this amazing group of filmmakers called Key Ideas. And it was just like at a conference, like totally one of those like sitting having the conference lunch with random people. And we're like, you know what, we should really do a video. We have a fundraiser every year. It's just a couple of boring speeches. Like, we don't serve clients directly, so we don't have any like really cool stories to tell. So let's do a video. And then when we sat down to be like, we're going to scramble together some dollars to pay for a video, what do we want it to do? We sat around the table, and we all collectively, we being our executive director at the time, Allison Sesso, me and the filmmakers, like, we cannot do another nonprofit video. Like, we cannot do the like children running across the court playing basketball, followed by like somebody sitting behind a desk and a voiceover that like hopefully sounds like Morgan Freeman saying like, save the children. Like, we can't do it. And if we're going to do that, we should just save our money. And I think my coping mechanism is sarcasm and humor. And I think a lot of us, especially in the last 2 years, it certainly has been. So we're like, let's just do something different. And we talk about some of the wonkiest issues, government procurement and like how contracts are administered. So like, how do we tell that story in a different way? And so we really were like inspired by people like Vu Lee, who had talked about like, what if nonprofits are run like pizza shop? And that was like our first video was really based on this idea of like using humor and sarcasm to kind of call out the absurdity of the nonprofit experience. And so that really kicked us off, and we got a really great response and had a lot of fun. And I think our members really appreciated like seeing their story and be able to like find humor in it.
Oh yeah. The pizza shop one is great. If you all have not seen it, what's the title of it?
Everyone Deserves a Fair Slice.
Everyone Deserves a Fair Slice. And you'll see it and you'll groan at all of the things where you're like, oh, I know exactly that problem where you have the donor who wants to donate, but they don't want to donate to overhead, or like, I'm going to write you a big check, but it's only going to be this one time because I don't want you to become dependent on me. Like all of the things.
Exactly.
I watched it. I was like, yep, check, check, check.
Yeah.
Tell me about the response that you get, because I think in nonprofits so often we're so reluctant, I think, to use humor as a tool and to really kind of cut through the noise. And so I'm curious, what was the impact that you saw? Because I think a lot of people think that if they step outside of the box, people are going to be upset.
Yeah. So we, and it's interesting because we debuted the video at an in-person gala. Everyone remembers those from, and everyone's standing and we're like, we're going to show a video, and you could see the collective groans and people like going for the exit, right? Like, can I leave? Can I not leave? Because nobody wants to stand and watch like a 10-minute video during one of these like nonprofit galas. And we also had government officials and others in the room. And so the jokes are very pointed. We call out our government friends. We have like some really great jokes about like using a feathered pen, like in blue ink to sign all the contract documents and stuff like that. And so I definitely looked at the crowd to just be like, oh, is this going to land? And it landed really well. I think first, as you said, Rhea, like people who are experienced with nonprofits and working with government and raising money, they saw themselves in the video. Like there's just so many absurd moments that we all have in a day that we really tried to capture, like having a scroll instead of a contract document, like just certain jokes like that, that are pretty harmless. But like, if you work at a nonprofit, you empathize with them. And our government partners laugh too. I think what we've learned is that a lot of people on the other side, we're all caught in the same system. Like no one person is responsible for how some of these systems operate and some of the issues that we have. And so for the most part, they laughed along with us. And so the response, I think, for the first video was really overwhelmingly positive. I think people were like happy to see the nonprofit sector break out and do something different. And it really like energized us and our members, and also got us in front of different audiences. It got us some national attention and got us in to meet some other nonprofit groups across the country that I think otherwise we would have never connected with. So I think for the first video, it was certainly like overwhelmingly positive and built a lot of spirit of collaboration.
I want to ask you about your board, because in my experience, it's often the boards that are the most conservative. And I'm just wondering, what was there a conversation on the board level about taking this very different approach?
Yeah. So I think first, we're really lucky to have cultivated a board that is really diverse. And I say diverse in a number of different ways. Like we've made a really conscious effort. I think nonprofit leadership has been overwhelmingly white and male for decades, which is not representative of who the sector is, workers or frontline staff or the people that we serve. And we've seen that shift in the sector. And we've also really been pointed about making that shift in our leadership. So I think we have a really dynamic set of leaders who come from different backgrounds inside and out of the sector and are also ready for something different. I really think what we're doing here is not so much as courageous as like riding the wave, right? Like we're all just so sick of it. I know we all feel that way now after 2 years of like doing these podcasts and Zooms instead of meeting in person, but I think our board was like, yes, what we're doing is not working. The system is broken. We have tried being nice. We have tried writing letters. We have done all of the things that we're supposed to do and been nice. And we need to be different and innovative and interesting and pushy. And so our board was overwhelmingly on board with the idea for sure.
Talk to me a little bit about the creative process to get there, because I think these videos are really kind of very different than what we generally see in the nonprofit field. And I do think given the number of constituents and stakeholders that we have to be mindful of, that can sometimes be at odds with humor. Like humor is meant to kind of poke and push the envelope a little bit. So tell me a little bit about what that process of developing these videos was like.
Yeah. So we sit with the creative team at Key Ideas. And they're really great writers and they use a lot of humor themselves. And we start with like a complaint session where we just complain about everything. And they write it all down and they ask questions, and they work with a bunch of other nonprofits nationally. So some of these issues are not things that they're unfamiliar with, but obviously like when we talk about contract amendments and delayed payments, they take a lot of notes. And then they kind of propose a couple of scenarios. They come up with like different types of skits and say like, do any of these strike you? And then what we end up doing is kind of just having a session with the staff where we start making jokes. We're like, oh, you know what we could include is we always have to do wet signatures and how silly is that? And like, you need four notaries and like blah, blah, blah. And so we start to think about like out of the scenarios that are presented, like what are some jokes that we could weave in? And then that's kind of how it takes shape. And then the Key Ideas team goes back and writes a script. And then we look at it and say, that's pump this up, not this. And then there's always one or two things where I'm like, ooh, yeah, I'll never be able to talk to another government official if we include that line. So maybe we'll take it out. And then we always go back and forth about whether we should include a swear word or not, things like that. And yeah, that's really the creative process. So it is very cathartic, and they do a really great job of capturing the essence of what we're trying to get across and taking some of the wonkiness out of it so that we don't take ourselves too seriously either.
Yeah. Talk about that a little bit, because I think one of the challenges, of which there are many, but one of the challenges with nonprofit communication is I think people get very in the weeds of the details of the, we're doing it like this and the wonky and the policy and whatever, but these videos are very approachable. They're very accessible to the everyday person who has no experience in policy. So talk a little bit about that decision. And was that an intentional decision that you made at the creative level?
Yeah. And I think that actually stems from even before we did a first video, there's this really great initiative out of the Human Services Assembly called and frameworks called Reframing Human Services. And everyone should check that out. So Human Services Assembly, Reframing Human Services. They did kind of a case study with this Frameworks Institute that actually talked to average humans about what do they think about human services. And basically the whole way we talk about ourselves is wrong. Like we talk about poor, vulnerable, people in need. And like none of that resonates with the average person. And we're just being so dense and also using, I think, language that really disenfranchises the communities we serve. And that's where, for us, where our journey started was, thankfully, this other group had done the legwork of kind of talking to people and finding out kind of what their views were on human services. And they used real kind of like ad expertise to say, we should be reframing how we talk about human services. So for us, that's where the journey started. And we really keep that in mind when we start going down, not just the like wonky level, but we never use the term vulnerable. People aren't vulnerable. And then whenever we always have someone who will say, well, what, how do you want to convey people in crisis? And you say, well, they're just New Yorkers. Like for us, you know, instead of saying vulnerable New Yorkers, you just say New Yorkers. And so for us, that was like the first initial learning lesson. And then I think when it comes to humor and breaking down these issues, I think those go hand in hand. Like we take ourselves so seriously. And I even find myself doing it. Like we have to explain everything very exactly and be precise. And that's just not how the world works. It doesn't mean you have to be wrong or do like fake news kind of stuff, but we can move away from having to be so precise in our language and meeting people where they are instead of trying to over-explain to them.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because I think at the end of the day, we live in a very noisy world and attention is hard to come by. Like we've got so much coming at us that if you're able to really take that second to actually have someone pay attention to you, even for a second, that's super valuable. And it's not going to happen if you use a lot of wonky terms and acronyms that nobody understands.
Exactly. Yeah. And obviously every sector is laden in acronyms and terms, but we certainly fall into it. And I think the sector always feels like we have to like prove that we're smart and like worthy of our seat at the table. And I think we take the approach of like, hell yeah, like we're here, we're serving millions of people, like listen to us. And if you have a question, I'm happy to answer it, but I don't need to like prove my value at the table.
Oh, I love that. It's like that confidence to claim an edge. Like you just belong at the table. Talk to me a little bit about how you formulated the videos to speak to a certain kind of audience. Like, did you have a particular audience in mind? And if so, how did you think about creating a video for them?
Yeah, I think the first video, which is that everyone deserves a fair slice, we were really speaking to our members. Like we wanted them to feel like we knew what they were going through, and that we had a grasp of their process and were able to like translate it to the general public. And of course, we're always trying to like teach people in these videos. So the idea is making something that is for our members and shows that HSC represents them, but also that they can share. We had a lot of people share it with their friends and family to just be like, see, this is what my day is like. And I think that for us was a success. And then as we went through the different videos, I think with the funder video, we definitely wanted to be a little bit more edgy on that one and kind of call out like the entire funding system and how the full system operates and how nonprofits play into that system. So we were really kind of calling out even our friends there a little bit about how we all play into this like absurd model. And then we did the Grinch video during the pandemic. And I think for us, that one was like, people were so just drained that we wanted to show up for them and give them like a reprieve. And so that one was less about like advocacy and more about comfort and humor for people in a really stressful time. And I think it's really culminated in the video that we just did, the State of the Sector musical video, which we moved slightly away from humor. I mean, there's certainly still parody and has some jokes in it, but for us, the new campaign that we're running, the Just Pay campaign, is really focused on the human services workforce. And they deserve to be taken seriously. And we need to show the work that they did during the pandemic. And so for us, that one is geared towards the public and to government. We're really lucky to have a new mayor and a newish governor, some new administrations, and to engage them early and let them know, really get to them and talk about how important this workforce is. So for us, that last video was about moving away from the kind of pure ridiculous humor that we had been using and honor the workforce and really the service that they've done in the last 2 years to people across the country.
So let me ask about any negative impact. So we've talked about all of these great things that happened. People shared, you got national recognition and so forth. Any blowback or anything that was negative?
Yeah, I mean, I think with all of them, there's always like one joke. Like I think in the first video, someone was like, you don't need to swear. You don't need to be sensational. And I was like, well, they've clearly never been in one of my meetings. Because something pops out at some point during the meeting anyway. And then I think with the funder video, there were certainly people who thought we were like a little mean, like we were kind of sarcastic in a negative way, which we can appreciate. So I think people always, and of course, when we did a second video, people were like, well, the pizza, it's not as good as the pizza video. And we're like, no shit. Like that is just always going to be, the first thing is always the best. And we've even thought about making like trilogy jokes before. And then there's been some feedback about like, is this where you're spending your money? Like, cause the production value looks so good. And by the way, the production value looks so good because our filmmakers are incredible and we have incredible organizations that like give us free space. Like Grand Street Settlement gave us their cafeteria for the first video. Henry Street Settlement like gave us staff and their entire theater for the last video. So we're just like really lucky. So I think that's been some of the, it's really just been around the edges. And of course, government not always happy to see themselves in those videos, but the other storms they weather. Some of the like, I would say softball jokes we throw at them are par for the course of being in those roles. So that's just been a little bit of the negative, but nothing like hard negative feedback that we've had to really grapple with.
Yeah. And honestly, if this is the worst thing that you have to deal with in your day as an elected, then you're having a pretty good day. Last question from me, Michelle. If folks are listening to this interview or on the call and they're thinking about maybe trying a little bit of a different approach, maybe stepping outside the box, maybe using humor or something a little bit more attention grabbing for their next campaign, what advice would you give them?
I have so much. So first I would say nonprofits need to engage in advocacy. Like they have to. You need to engage your community. You need to engage government. You need to engage your workers. Join coalitions, formal or informal. Like we need to be part of a bigger system. And for me, what it really centers on is the nonprofit sector was not designed to eliminate poverty. It was really designed to soften the worst impacts of capitalism and the system that we live in. And we as a sector cannot participate in that. Like my members are predominantly government funded and they are always caught between taking a contract that doesn't pay the full value and pay workers what they deserve or turning down that contract and taking a vital community service out of that community. So my job as an advocate is to fight for them. And I can't do that if I'm careful and quiet and polite. And I think as a sector, we all need to be taking more risks. Like the business sector, there's a reason that your iPhone says like version 82.42 is like, it breaks and nothing works. Like they have to fix it. And I think we as a sector are so worried about being precise and never being wrong that we never take risks. And so if one of our videos didn't land, like who cares? Like 2 minutes later, there's something else on the news. And if you do a call-in day and no one shows up, then just do another one. And so I think people really do need to take risks in their advocacy and in their programs. And we're never going to serve our communities the way that we need to if we continue to be so careful and polite. And I think that's, and I don't mean be impolite. I just mean, I think a lot of times people are like, we can't even say we're disappointed. Like that's the big letter word that everyone uses. Like we're disappointed in the governor's budget. Well, I'm pissed off about the governor's budget because, I mean, not this year because Governor Hochul included $500 million for human service COLA. So it's great. But for the last 15 years, the governor did not include a COLA. So I'm pissed off. I'm not disappointed. Disappointed was 10 years ago. And so I think we have to be more realistic and direct in our communications. And I think the biggest thing is to take risks and try things new. Because if it fails, it's not brain surgery. Like no one's on the operating table. Like if my Colin Day fails, it's fine. We'll just do another one. And so I think that's the big thing.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that because I think so often in nonprofit, we let perfect be the enemy of the good. And we are so afraid of failure. Like we create these narratives in our minds about if we don't do the thing or if we offend someone or da 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 da, or if it doesn't land, it's going to be the end of the world. It rarely is. And I think if anything, we can take a page out of the for-profit sector because I think what I've admired about, particularly in the startup space, is this ethos of fail forward, fail often, like hurry up and fail so you can get to the next thing because we have a bigger mission to fulfill. And we can't do it if we're pulling our hair out over every single word in it. First of all, no one's actually reading your email. Sorry, but it's true.
And I think that's the other piece of this is that I think also to save my nonprofit friends, like some of that pressure is external. Like everyone's iPhone breaks when U2 downloads an album and we're all still using our iPhone. But when a nonprofit has a failure, a minor one, it's like in the news or you get a lot of heat from your donors and things like that. And obviously there's a seriousness of what does failure mean. But you know, if you ever try a program and you think you're going to serve 50 people and you serve 40, like there's just a lot of like, we expect so much of nonprofits, even though we underfund them and don't appreciate the work that they're doing. So that pressure is coming from external factors. And I think that's what we can do as leaders is push back on that. Like when someone tells me, oh, I don't know about that video, or it seems like you cost a lot of money. I was like, well, how much do you think video should cost? Like, what else do you think we should be doing? Like, join me in this conversation about how to fix it instead of just like passing by and saying something from your balcony with your, you know, like, just don't shout down to me what I should be doing. Why don't you help me? And so I think that's like, I understand the external pressure that nonprofit leaders face. And I also think we have to be a little bit braver in saying like, okay, thanks.
Yeah. Well, everyone has an opinion. And
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's an R-rated
version. We all know how that saying ends. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the other thing is that keeps coming to me is like, well-behaved women don't make history. So to your point about being quiet and polite and not offending anybody, that's not how you make change happen. That's not how you make history.
Exactly.
Want to make an omelet?
Totally.
Got to break some eggs. What strikes me as you were talking about creating this video is it sounds like you really started with what is a feeling that we want people to come away with. Is that right?
Yeah. I often say that agency is like a giant complaint box. And that's what our job is like, I need you to tell me, my members, I need you to tell me what's wrong. Like, what's not working for you? What are the things that keep you up at night? What are the things that government's doing today? Like, what are the things that need to be fixed? And so we feel like a giant complaint box. And I like feed off the energy of those members. Like, we know when they're frustrated. And like during the pandemic, it was different. It wasn't like we never get paid on time. It was like, do I lay people off? Like, what do I do with my workers who are predominantly people of color who are at the front lines? They have to go to work because somebody has to keep the shelter open and someone has to deliver the meals. And so we do try to capture that energy. And I think it's a really important thing for us to show to our members, like we're working on it and everything sucks and we hear you. And so I think that it's not just that we hear you, but we feel you. And I think with the video we just did, the State of the Sector musical, we really did want to capture like nonprofit people put their lives on the line throughout this pandemic and they died. Like that's the reality of the situation that we all experienced in the last 2 years, and human services workers put themselves in danger and their families in danger to make sure that seniors had meals, that homeless shelters stayed open, that kids got tablets so that they could get some sort of internet and continue to go to school. There's just a myriad of like real heroic stories out there. And I feel like it's our responsibility, my responsibility to like capture that, those stories in that narrative. And we try to do that in the videos. And so it went from like, how absurd is the system to like, how messed up is the system and we're not going to take it anymore. And I think that's where we are in like 4 short years.
Yeah. Something that just occurred to me as you were speaking to is I know in the nonprofit field, we do feel so much pressure to appear to be competent and credible and validated and that we deserve a seat at the table. And I guess I just wonder whether or not that's exacerbated by the fact that most of the folks in the nonprofit sector are women and folks of color. And I think there's a real pressure to sort of prove our credentials before we feel like we're able to speak. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I remember, I think it was Robert Egger, like many moons ago from DC Kitchen, who said, like, this is women's work. Like historically, nonprofit spaces have been women's work. And so it's no surprise that we're treated the way that we are. And I think I add to that, like what I say now is the reason nonprofits are treated the way they are is because of who we are and who we serve. We're overwhelmingly women. We're overwhelmingly people of color, both in terms of who we employ and who we serve. And so it's intentional. It's by design. We have elected officials who stand up and say, we're going to end homelessness. And there's not a nonprofit homeless provider in the room. And we had a governor who talked about gender pay equity for a decade. And he never once gave a cost of living adjustment to 800,000 human services workers who are 80% women. So he held the purse strings to 800,000 jobs and he screwed them over every year. And so that's when we talk about like having an edge, like some of the edge is like, I'm just fed up and I'm not going to take it anymore. I think that like when you pass the halls of Albany every March and you see all the like celebration of women and you're marching around with your like flyers for like, can you please give us a 3% increase on workers who are making poverty level wages? Like it's hard to swallow that. And I think that we as a sector, like there's always like, we're charitable or we're doing God's work, which is like my least favorite like phrase ever. And I'm like, no, we're saving lives and making the economy work. And so like, give us our place at the table. And I think you're totally right that historically women and people of color have always had to like earn their place. And we're nonprofits as opposed to like, so we're already like a negative, like if we could find a new word, that would be like, I could retire. And I think that's why we have to be a little bit bolder and like cause some trouble, because being polite and just being like, I guess we'll sit in the back and like, listen, is like, no, it hasn't worked. And I think we all know it's not working because I'd be out of a job if that worked. Like if the way we were doing business worked, like I'd go work somewhere else because there wouldn't be anything for me to do.
Right. All right. We have a question coming in from Bonnie. Bonnie, please. Join us.
Hello. Hi, Michelle. Nice to see you. I guess, I mean, we're in a similar situation of being kind of a coalition and really feeling like we have the opportunity to be a mouthpiece for our members a lot. And sometimes it just feels so overwhelming to like, when there's so many issues, to know like within the constraints of our capacity, like what to take on and what like are we kind of uniquely positioned to take on, or what should be done, you know, would another group be better for? So I was just wondering kind of how you make those decisions about what to prioritize and what like what you consider through that process.
Yeah, that is definitely something that like takes up a lot of my brain space and time. I have 170 members. I love them all. And coalition work is the hardest thing ever. And if everyone would just let me be like a dictator, I promise I would do it for good and solve all the problems and leave me alone. So I appreciate like the tension. And I think what we try to do is weigh what's the expertise that they've charged HSC with. Like they've put me in this position, the board's put me in the position, but also like a really great staff. We talk a lot about politics, which I think is something that like when nonprofits come to us, and remember one meeting, someone was like, you should tell the speaker basically that like, we're done working with him over this thing. Basically like screw you is what they wanted to like say to speaker. And we're like, over this issue? Like, is this the thing that you want us to like blow up everything over? And then people are like, oh yeah, I guess not. So I think there's some like kind of therapy of like managing feelings and expectations. And then like repeating back to people like, hey, so here are the issues that you're really talking about. And here's where I think we have a new administration and they put together this joint procurement task force. So here's three things that we can move and here's something that we should save. And I think that part of it is just like moving the puzzle pieces around. And I think we have a lot of like frank conversations, let people like feel their feelings. And then we're like, okay, but yeah, that's not all going to work. And I think anyone who's listening, who's been part of our network for a while, like we had a big convening of nonprofit leaders and we were thinking about like how to build a campaign and all of that. And the list was like 20 things. And I was like, have we ever heard of a campaign on 20 things? Like when we think about marriage equality and fair fares, which is like the subway, we pick one thing and we build power around it and we win. Then you try to do work in partnership on the other things. So I think for us, there's a lot of like, what are the politics? Like letting the politics be the tea leaves that we have to read to like figure out some of the priorities. Like what are the things that we can leverage when? And I think also just being really realistic about like bandwidth and like politics. Like I think, Bonnie, you probably get this, like once every 6 months, someone's like, you know what you should do is you should get an op-ed in the New York Times. I'm like, oh man, never thought of that.
Thanks for mentioning.
Yeah, I'm just going to type that up right now and mail it in. So I similarly have had some frank conversations where I'm like, cool. Yeah, no, like maybe someday. And of course we keep trying, but like you need to realize that nobody gets an op-ed in the New York Times. So it's probably far-fetched. So I think having those like real level setting conversations has benefited us. And I love my leaders and they come to these spaces and talk and have to go back to like literally saving lives. So it's my job to like put those pieces together and help them sort their feelings out.
All right, we have one question coming in from Andrea. I think we have time for one last question. So Andrea, jump in here, friend.
Sure. Hi, thank you so much. This is a great conversation. Michelle, thank you so much for your leadership, your bold leadership, I'd add. I know trying something new organizationally is really scary, at least for me. So I'm just wondering, you described the process that you went through in thinking through your campaigns and trying something pretty drastically different. So I'm thinking about like the night before, the day before that first video launches, like what was your feeling as a staff or as a team? Like nervous, scared, excited, all the above? And maybe how did you prepare your team in case there was any like pushback or anything like that? Was that something you went through as part of the process?
Yeah. So first, it's so nice to be surrounded by like friends who have been part of this with us in many of the different ways. And yeah, and I think there was like definitely, well, it's funny. Whenever I think of that first video, I think of poor Jason Wu, who's on with us, like who just was so worried that the tech wouldn't work. And like, that's what I actually remember. I know, not like the dramatic answer, but we were really excited. And the night before was definitely like, man, all these jokes, they're not good. People aren't going to laugh. Like, I felt a little like, oh, we're doing like a stand-up routine. And I felt that way about every video. And even the ones that we premiered during the pandemic, I basically like got to just sit in my living room, like spinning in my chair, like being like, what's going to happen? And so I think we were prepared. And anyone who worked with Allison Sesso, who was around for the first two videos, she's remarkably confident. So she was like, these are going to be great. Like nobody, everyone's going to laugh. Like I learned a lot of my brush off from her because she was just like, these are going to be perfect. Don't worry about it. And I think what we do is we do a lot of like careful planning. It's like we work with smart experts, like Key Ideas, who's been amazing. We always float the script by like at least a couple of our board members. And the staff is really, I think the HSC staff is amazing. And they really go through and say like, I don't know if this one lands, or like, do we have diversity of opinion here? And like, they're really, really thoughtful. So we do a lot of damage control in advance. And I think that's the best way to do it. Because then I think when you get that random, like, oh, I don't know about that one, you're like, okay. And then if there's a real complaint, like, of course, we're happy to deal with them and figure it out and try to work through those. And luckily, there hasn't been any of those big things. There certainly has been with some of, not the videos, but some of our other campaign work where people are like, I don't think that lands, or there's certain things like language that you should change. And so I think really it's about preparation so that you feel like really confident in the work that you're doing, that like you've gotten the most input that you can. And then you have to Bonnie's question earlier, you have to sort through that input. You cannot implement it all. So you just have to like be inclusive in the process. And then stand by your product, I guess, is like the short answer to that. Because I think, especially as you do new things, there's always people who have an opinion, and it comes, some of it comes from a good place and some of it doesn't. And so you just have to like sort that through. And even sometimes the good feedback is like, okay, I don't know what I could do with that. Like I could have not done a video, basically. So I think sorting it into those buckets is really important. And then you give yourself some space to like read the emails while you're having a cocktail. That's also like important thing. Throw something back.
You know what?
So y'all, it doesn't impact you as much.
It takes courage to do something different, but you have, hence the name of this webinar, the courage to claim an edge. Michelle, last question for me before we wrap up. If you had a billboard where you could put anything, it's your message to the world and the universe, what would be on your billboard?
Oh no, that's such a good question. Right now, I think, especially with the campaign that we're launching, so it sounds a little like a infomercial, but it's not, is like, if you, at the end of our video, and I'll bleep myself, is like, we say like, just effing pay. So the campaign is just pay, but in my heart, it's just effing pay. Like, just pay for the shit that you want. Like, government needs to pay 100 cents for the services that they want. Like, there's this great phrase of like, if NASA says they need $10 million to go to the moon, you don't give them $8 million. Because you know what, they don't make it. And every day we ask the sector to do that. So the essence of our campaign is just effing pay. Like just pay for what you want, pay for what you need, give our workers like the equitable wages that they deserve. And so that's what I would do. And we had like the very nice logo of the hands going back to get, you know, around, but I do think I would have like a hand flipping somebody off in it because it's like, it's so frustrating. Yeah. So that's my billboard. Just
amazing.
Effing pay.
Just effing pay, y'all. All right, Michelle, this is awesome. Where can people find you on the interwebs? What would be the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, so we're humanservicescouncil.org, and we're also on Twitter and all things at HSC_NY. And then our Just Pay campaign is justpayny.org. So if you're interested in that billboard, that's where you can find some of that. But yeah, that's all the best ways to find us.
Awesome. And is it okay if people connect with you via LinkedIn?
Oh, absolutely. I am definitely on LinkedIn as Michelle Jackson, and happy to have people. Our email addresses are also on the website, so feel free to reach out to us. We're always happy to connect with members and non-members and figure out how we can make a bigger network of troublemakers.
Awesome. So fun. And if you haven't already, go watch those videos. They're really fun. And be bold, y'all. Think about your own campaigns. Don't be afraid to claim an edge, because you know what? Nobody remembers boring.
That's so true. And thank you for having me on. I love having, like, taking some space to like talk about some of the cooler aspects of the work that we do instead of like being cogs in the wheel all the time, right? You like feel like you're really in it. And so it's always really nice to connect with like-minded people and be inspired to claim that edge.
All right. Thanks so much, Michelle. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.